Hello. Before we get started, I think it's a good point to reflect a little on how far we've come. First, I should congratulate you on making it this far into the story. I've been producing this podcast for about a year and a half, and in terms of raw text, we're not quite at the midpoint of the epic. There have been some difficult parts of the narrative, such as the interminable storytelling in the Book of the Forest, but you made it through. I myself had to struggle with the decision whether to leave some stories out or stay true to the original. Out of respect for the epic, I decided to include it all in the podcast, and if you're still with me at this point, hopefully that means I made the right decision. Of course, it speaks well for the epic itself, in that I do not know of any other work of ancient literature that could captivate my interest long enough to continue with such a mammoth undertaking. So thank you for staying with me on this long journey, and I hope you'll stick it out to the very end. After all, as Vyasa promised at the very beginning of the story, those who retell the Mahabharata and those who listen both acquire great merit in the higher worlds. If we can make it to the very end of the epic, it will be our express ticket to an extended vacation in Devaloka, drinking soma and partying in Indra's Great Hall. Now, let's get back to the story. This is the Mahabharata Podcast, Episode 61, War is Hell. Last time, we finished the Bhagavad Gita. Arjun had become weak in the knees over the prospect of killing his elders and kinfolk, so Krishna had to set him straight and get his friend back into the fight. Arjun specifically needed to reconcile the conflict between carrying out his dharma when his dharma required him to commit atrocities. This problem was Krishna's starting point. He addressed it by saying it's better to do one's own dharma badly than to do another's well. Secondly, he said, never mind the bloodshed, since no one really dies. From there, he launched into a discussion of the unreality of this existence. More practically, Krishna pointed out that Arjun really had few alternatives to fighting, because no matter what excuse he used for not fighting, he would suffer dishonor and ignominy if he retreated. I'm not sure how one can argue that the world is unreal and then discourage you by threatening that others will make fun of you. The subtle question that is not directly answered is, how does one even know what their true dharma is? What if Arjun's dharma was to become a pacifist at this moment and to endure the disgrace as a protest to the world's violence? For those of us who do not have Krishna in the driver's seat, how would we know whether our dharma was to fight or to run away? Perhaps the question is even more urgent in this modern age. After all, Arjun was born to fight, so you could easily imagine his dharma had something to do with fighting. In our times, we have no such certainty in life. We cherish our freedom, but then we lack any guidelines to help us chart the direction of our lives. But although Krishna does not address this question directly, I think we can find a subtle answer if we look carefully. I believe what Krishna is telling us is that he is indeed in the driver's seat for every one of us. Arjun was fortunate in that Krishna was literally driving his chariot. But Krishna's message is that he's driving all of our chariots. We just haven't been paying attention, so we haven't noticed. So it looks like the trick to finding one's dharma is to open up a line of communication with Krishna himself. If one's devotion is true, you will intuitively know whether you should fight or run away. Arjun had no such difficulty. He knew without question that his dharma was to fight. Now he has reconciled that and is ready to go. We left off with Arjun having regained his convictions, and, to the clamor of both armies, he and Krishna resumed their position among the Pandava forces. The gods and immortal rishis all gathered around up in the sky, setting up folding chairs and beer coolers so they could relax and watch the action down below. But then suddenly, Yudhishthira jumped down and began jogging off to the enemy lines, stripping off his armor as he went. He cast his weapons away and walked in the direction of the car of a commander. Out of respect and concern, his brothers and friends also put down their weapons and followed him out to the enemy side, to witness what he was about to do. Worried, the brothers tried to ask Yudhishthira what he was up to, but they got no reply. Krishna was also with them, and he reassured his friends. He said, "Don't worry, I know what he's up to." The spectators on the Kaurava side also thought they knew what he was about. They assumed that whatever qualms that had momentarily taken Arjun out of the fight had now settled on the king, and he was coming over to negotiate a surrender. Among the Dhartarashtras, they whispered, "Our cousin is a disgrace to the whole clan. He's clearly terrified, and now he's coming with his brothers seeking protection. What a wuss. How did this effeminate sadhu manage to become the firstborn of the Kurus? Meanwhile, Yudhishthira led his brothers, unarmed and on foot, through the bristling ranks of Bhishma's honor guard, paying no heed to their threatening looks. He walked up to Bhishma, knelt, and seized the commander's feet in his hands. He said, "I salute you, unconquerable lord. As we are about to fight you, I ask for your blessing." Bhishma was moved by this show of fealty. He said, "Had you not come to me, I would have cursed you, and you would have surely lost this battle. But I am pleased with you, my son. May you win victory in this battle and have all that you wish for. Now, choose a boon. What can I do for you?" Yudhishthira said, "I understand why you are fighting for the Kaurava side, and that you are doing the right thing according to your dharma. So I only ask for your advice. Please tell me, how can we defeat you in combat?" Bhishma said, "That's a tough question, because really, I don't see how anyone can beat me, not even Indra himself. And besides, the time for my death has not come. Ask me again later." Yudhishthira accepted this reply, saluted his uncle, and then proceeded to his respected guru, Drona. He bowed to his teacher and asked him, "My lord, how may I fight such that I can defeat my enemies, yet incur no sin for it? I can also assure you that with Hari on your side, victory is certain. What else can I do for you?" Yudhishthira said, "Okay then, tell me, how can I defeat you?" Drona was a bit elusive about giving a straight answer. He said, "As long as I'm still in the fight, you cannot win. My suggestion is that you and your brothers try to kill me as best you can." This wasn't much of an answer, so the king pressed him some more. "Can't you tell us more specifically how we might pull that off?" I don't think Drona was very interested in getting killed, because his advice was somewhat evasive. He said, "As long as I am still fighting, you will never win, so I suggest you try having your brothers kill me." Yudhishthira pressed him some more, saying, "Come on, I'm begging you, how can we kill you?" Drona said, "Seriously, as long as I'm in the fight, there's no way you'll win, and there's no way you whippersnappers can beat me. However, if I drop my weapons and withdraw my senses ready for death, then I can be killed. If you really must know, I will only do that if I hear something utterly displeasing from a trustworthy man, and that's all." Yudhishthira quietly filed that away, probably pondering whom he could persuade to compromise his honor for the sake of the cause. He then moved on to Guru number 2, Kripa, and asked for his blessing. Kripa also praised his disciple for having come to pay respects. He asked, "What do you wish for, apart from having me change sides?" Yudhishthira began to ask the same question he'd asked the others, but it was too much for him. He choked up and could not speak. Kripa knew what he meant to ask, so he went ahead and answered. He said, "Fight and may you win victory. I'm pleased you came to me. Every morning when I get up, I shall wish you victory." Finally, Yudhishthira bowed to King Shalya and paid him the same respect. Shalya replied in the same manner as the other elders, but pressed Yudhishthira, asking how he could be of help. Yudhishthira said, "Just give me your counsel should I need it, and fight as you please on the enemy side." Remember, Shalya was the king who had answered Yudhishthira's call for allies, but was tricked into joining with the Kaurava side. Shalya pressed Yudhishthira some more. "Of course I'm fighting with the Kauravas, you know all about that, so what can I do for you?" Yudhishthira said, "We already talked about this. Do you want me to mention it now? I want you to mess with Karna when he comes out to fight, to throw him off his game, remember?" Satisfied, Shalya said, "Your wish shall be fulfilled, just as you said it. Go with confidence, I promise you victory." Finally, the formalities were over, and Yudhishthira and his posse walked back to their army. Krishna, however, stayed behind and sidled up to Karna. Krishna said, "Hey, Karna, I heard you won't fight with the Kauravas until Bhishma's dead." Karna said, "Yeah, what of it?" Krishna said, "Why don't you come over and fight with us? You'll get a chance to get in a few good blows against your friends Bhishma and Drona. Then, when Bhishma's dead, you can come back and fight on the other side like you promised." Karna said, "You know better than that. I'd never do anything that would displease Duryodhana. I'm ready to die for him." When the Pandavas were between the opposing lines, Yudhishthira turned back to the Kaurava army and called out, "If there's anyone here who wants to change sides and fight with me, you're welcome to come over." It was Yuyutsu, Dhritarashtra's 101st son, born of a serving girl and the only Kaurava to speak out against the dice game, who cheerfully volunteered and drove his chariot to the Pandava camp. Yudhishthira cheered him on, saying, "Come on over, we'll fight your witless brothers together. Now, at least, Dhritarashtra has a chance that some one of his sons will survive to make offerings to his ghost." To the beating of drums, Yuyutsu and the Pandavas took their positions in their army. Yudhishthira retrieved his gilded armor that shone like the sun, and, seeing him surrounded by his four brothers and numerous kings, the soldiers all cheered him, feeling the battle must be good as won. In high spirits, the men pounded on huge kettle drums and blew on thousands of milk-white conches. Describing what he saw to Dhritarashtra, Sanjay said, "To the beating of drums, your son Yuyutsu abandoned his kin and went over to Pandu's sons. Then Duryodhana, surrounded by his brothers, advanced with his forces against the Pandava line. With a wild roar, we charged against them and they against us. There was a great tumult. The noise of the army, swarming with kings, elephants, horses, and chariots, was like the ocean in a tempest. Drowning out the rest came Bhimasena's roar. The pent-up rage and frustration broke forth and made the enemy's hair stand on end. The horses and elephants all defecated at the sound of his terrible war cry. Bhimasena launched a counterattack, scaring the Dhritarashtras witless. To counter this frightening assault, a second detachment of Duryodhana's brothers rushed at the Pandava's flank, firing iron arrows. To back up Bhimasena, the sons of Draupadi and Arjun's son Abhimanyu then joined in the fray. So far, only the Kuru clansmen were fighting. The rest of their allies on both sides hung back, perhaps watching to take the measure of the people they had tied their fates to. Eventually, Duryodhana withdrew from the melee and commanded his allies to enter the fight. Only then did the rest of the armies enter the battle. Sanjay was particularly impressed with the Drona's performance. He saw the Brahmin and his acolytes standing their ground and firing arrows with supernatural accuracy and speed. On both sides, the warriors recalled past grievances they had against some other fighter on the opposite side, and their rage boiled up. Sanjay said the fighting that morning was extraordinarily fierce. At this point, aside from the colorful language, the story of the day's fighting becomes more and more like the running commentary of a sporting event. Bhishma pulled out a gigantic, scary-looking bow and launched an attack on Arjun. The two squared off, but not much came out of the encounter. Satyaki attacked Kritavarman. They both drew blood, but withdrew while still able-bodied. Arjun's heroic son Abhimanyu took on Bharadbala of Kushala, pumped 9 arrows into the guy, and killed his driver and squire. Bhima skirmished with Duryodhana, the violence of which made all the others pause in their fighting to watch. Dushasan attacked Nakul, piercing his guts with razor-tipped arrows. But Nakul was unfazed. He just laughed and returned fire, breaking Dushasan's bow, knocking out his quiver, and sticking him like a pincushion with arrows. A similar duel took place between Sahadev and Durmukha, one of Duryodhana's lesser brothers. The pair only succeeded in killing each other's horses and drivers. Yudhishthira attacked Shalya of the Madras, but his unwilling opponent shot out his bow before he could do any damage. King Drupad's son, the valiant Drishtadyumna, who was born to get revenge on Drona, went right after the old Brahmin. Drona did not hesitate to attack the son of his former friend, and quickly shot out the boy's bow, and then struck him with an arrow. The prince was not deterred. Drishtadyumna stayed in the fight, and neither of the two was able to gain the upper hand. Bhima's Rakshasa son, Ghatotkacha, was also in the action, fighting a duel with a Rakshasa ally of the Kauravas called Alambusha. Not yet gunning for Bhishma, Sikandin stuck to his father's grudge match with Drona and attacked Drona's beloved son, Ashvataman. King Drupad had other feuds to attend to. He took on Jayadratha of Sindh, the guy who tried to run off with Drupad's daughter, Draupadi. The two of them were well matched, fighting each other to a standstill. Elsewhere on the battlefield, Yudhishthira's son, Pratavindya, tried to settle an old score of his father's by attacking Shakuni. Sanjay observed that initially the fighting began in a rather formal way, with each warrior facing off with a worthy adversary, all of whom were well matched. This soon grew frustrating for both sides, because no one made any headway. Frustrated with this stalemate, they were soon whipped up into a frenzy and they forgot all proprieties. By late morning, the combatants were ready to throw all the rules of war to the side if they could just kill a few of their enemies. Their brilliant banners were cast aside and ground into the dirt, while broken chariots and dying animals littered the field. Proud kings clambered on foot over the wreckage and fought each other hand to hand, possessed by a demonic frenzy to kill at any cost. Injured elephants, pierced with spears and arrows, stampeded madly across the plain, wildly killing more combatants than any of the vaunted heroes on either side. The lovely sentiment that each fighter would stick to fighting his own kind, infantry against infantry, cavalry against cavalry, was quickly forgotten, as low-born men beheaded noble chariot warriors, and cavalry officers decimated the humble foot soldiers. The high-born of both sides were well-trained and securely armored. Thus, their fatalities so far were non-existent. But among the lower classes, the bloodshed and slaughter was obscene. The ground was littered with their bodies, all cut up and punctured with missiles. As they screamed in pain and cried for help, the chariots heedlessly rolled right over them, the horses grinding them into pulp, while the wheels sliced through them like ruts in a muddy road. The effect of the elephant's feet on these injured bodies was simply unspeakable. Only then, when the sun had just reached its zenith in the sky, did Bhishma launch his first assault on the main body of the Pandava army. We'll end it here for now. Next time, we'll finish up the first day of the battle and see if either side is able to overcome this stalemate and make some inroads on their opponents. Thanks for listening.